Gentleman Spaceman!
Mind Bent on Mars, Episode 5.
Your mind is weak, Dirk Danger. I have bent it to see what I want you to see. Now, see this.
With another wave of the doctor's hand, 4 Martian ape men appear and move to attack. Does Dirk Danger escape unscathed? Find out next time on
Gentleman Spaceman!
Hello, and welcome back to Gentleman Spaceman's Atomic Hideout. Each episode, we explore classic sci-fi from the atomic age and beyond. I'm your host, Brad Grahowski. If you'd like to know more about me, please visit thevoiceofbrad.com. If you are enjoying the Atomic Hideout, that's fantastic. All we ask in return is that you consider subscribing and leaving a review wherever it is that you enjoy listening to podcasts. Really, that's it. We don't even have a Patreon. And sure, it will take you just a moment, but it will help new listeners find their way to join us here in the hideout. Thank you. Today, we will return to Cary Rockwell's Stand By for Mars, Chapter 5, a Tom Corbett Space Academy adventure. It was originally published in 1952 by Rock Hill Radio. Things get a little rough in Chapter 5. There is some violence, so please be warned. Stand By for Mars by Cary Rockwell. Chapter 5. Will this do, Manning? Asked Tom. The 3 boys were in a secluded corner of a gym, a large hall, on the 14th floor of the dormitory building. At the far end of the gym, a group of cadets had just finished a game of mercury ball and were sauntering to the showers. When the last boy had disappeared, the floor was deserted except for Tom, Roger, and Astro.
"This'll do fine, Corbett," said Roger.
The boxing ring had been taken down the week before to make room for drills and the physical exercises of the earthworms, so the 3 boys had to improvise a ring. They dragged 4 large tumbling mats together, spread them side by side to form a square close to the size of an actual ring. Astro went to one of the small lockers under the balcony and returned with 2 pairs of boxing gloves.
"Here," Astro offered, "put these on."
"Gloves?" asked Roger in a voice of mock surprise. "I thought this was going to be a battle of blood."
"Any way you want it, Manning, any way at all," said Tom.
"You're going to use gloves," growled Astro. "I don't want anybody killed."
He threw a pair at each of them.
"There'll be 3-minute rounds with 1-minute rest," he continued. "Go off the mats and you'll be counted out. Usual rules otherwise. Any questions?"
"Clear to me, Astro," said Tom.
"Let's go,"
nodded Roger.
"One more thing," said Astro. "I hope Tom pins your ears back, Manning, but I'm going to see that both of you get a fair deal. So keep the punches up and fight it out. All right. Time."
The 2 boys moved carefully to the center of the improvised ring, their guards up, while Astro stood off the edge of the mat and watched the sweeping second hand of his wrist chronograph. Shuffling forward, Tom pushed out a probing left and then tried to cross his right, but Manning stepped back easily, countering with a hard left to Tom's heart.
"I forgot to tell you, Corbett," he called out. "I'm considered a counterpuncher. I always—"
He was cut off with a sharp left to the face that snapped his head back and his lips curled in a smile of condescension.
"Good. Very good, Corbett."
Then, with lightning speed and the grace of a cat, Roger slipped inside Tom's guard, punching hard and true. A left, a right, and a left pounded into Tom's midsection, and as he gave way momentarily, Tom's face clouded over. They circled. Tom kept leading with sharp lefts that popped in and out like a piston, always connecting and keeping Roger off balance.
Roger concentrated on penetrating Tom's defense, methodically pounding his ribs and heart and trying to wear him down.
"Time," bawled Astro.
The two boys dropped their hands and turned back to their corners. They squatted on the floor, breathing slowly and easily. Astro stood in the middle of the ring, glaring at both of them in turn and shaking his head.
"Huh, I expected to see you two try to wallop each other into meteor dust. Keep fighting like that and we'll be here all night."
"Dr. Corbett," sneered Roger. "Looks like he's afraid to mix it up."
"You fight your way, Roger, and I'll fight mine," replied Tom, his voice cold and impersonal.
"Time,"
suddenly yelled Astro and stepped back off the mat. The two cadets jumped to their feet and met in the center of the ring again. With a bull-like rush, Roger changed tactics and began to rain punches all over Tom's body. But the curly-haired cadet stood his ground coolly, picking some off in midair with his gloves and sliding under others. Then, as Roger slowed down, Tom took the offensive, popping his left into his opponent's face steadily and methodically, while keeping his right cocked for a clear opening to the chin. Roger danced in and out, watching Tom's left as though it was a snake and trying unsuccessfully to get through his guard. But the sharp lefts kept snapping his head back, and his face began to redden, not only from the sting of the blows, but with the mounting fury of his frustration. Suddenly, as Astro raised his arm to call time for the end of the round, Roger jumped forward and rained another series of harmless blows on Tom's shoulders and arms. But then, as the big Venusian called time, he stepped back and Tom dropped his guard. Instantly, Roger threw a right with all his weight behind it. It landed flush on Tom's jaw and he dropped, sprawling full length on the mats and lying still. Smiling, Roger sauntered to his corner while Astro charged in and bent over the fallen cadet.
"None of that, Astro," snapped Roger. "Since when does a referee take sides? Leave him alone. If he doesn't come out for the next round, you have to count him out."
The big Venusian straightened and walked menacingly toward Roger's corner.
"You hit him after I call time," he growled.
"So I have to take you on too, huh?" Roger jumped to his feet. "All right, come on, you big blast of space gas."
"Wait, Astro, wait." Astro suddenly wheeled around to see Tom shaking his head weakly and trying to rise up on his elbows. He rushed back to the fallen boy's side. Roger shouted at him angrily,
"Hey, leave him alone!"
Go blow your jets,"
was Astro's snarling reply as he bent over Tom, who was now sitting up.
"Tom, are you okay?"
Yeah. He replied weakly. "But stay out of this. You're the referee. How much time left?"
20 seconds, said Astro. "Roger smacked you after I called time."
"Oh, if he did, I didn't know a thing about it. I was out." Tom managed a cold smile. Nice punch, Roger.
10 seconds,
said Astro, stepping back off the mat.
"Thanks for the compliment, Corbett."
Roger eyed the other cadet speculatively.
"But are you sure you want to go on?"
"I was saved by the bell, wasn't I?"
"Yeah, sure. But if you'd rather quit..."
"Time,"
cried Astro. Tom rose to his feet, shook his head, and brought up his hands. He wasn't a moment too soon. Roger had rushed across the mat, trying to land another murderous right. Tom brought up his shoulder just in time, slipping with the punch, and at the same time bringing up a terrific left to Roger's open midsection. Manning let out a grunt and clinched. Tom pursued his advantage, pumping rights and lefts into his body, and he could feel the arrogant cadet weakening. Suddenly, Roger crowded in close, wrestling Tom around so that Astro was on the opposite side of the mat, then brought up his head under Tom's chin. The pop of Tom's teeth could be heard all over the great hall. Roger quickly stepped back and backpedaled until Astro called time.
"Ugh, thanks for teaching me that one, Roger. Learned two tricks from you today," said Tom, breathing heavily, but with the same cold smile on his face. "That's all right, Corbett. Anytime," said Manning.
"What tricks?" asked Astro. He looked suspiciously at Manning, who was doubled over, finding it hard to breathe.
"Nothing I can't handle in time," said Tom, looking at Roger.
"Time," called Astro and stepped off the mat. The two boys got to their feet slowly. The pace was beginning to show on them, and they boxed carefully. The boys were perfectly matched, Tom constantly snapping Roger's head back with the jolting left jabs and following to the head or heart with the right cross, and Roger counterpunching, slipping hooks and body punches in under Tom's long leads. It was a savage fight. The 3 weeks of hard physical training had conditioned the boys perfectly. At the end of the 12th round, both boys showed many signs of wear. Roger's cheeks were as red as the glow of a jet blast deflector from the hundreds of lefts Tom had pumped into his face, while Tom's ribs and midsection were bruised and raw, where Roger's punches had landed successfully. It couldn't last much longer, thought Astro, as he called time for the beginning of the 13th round. Roger quickened his pace, dancing in and out, trying to move in under Tom's lefts. But suddenly, Tom caught him with a right hand that was cocked and ready. It staggered him, and he fell back, covering up. Tom pressed his advantage, showering rights and lefts everywhere he could find an opening. In desperation, his knees buckling, Roger clinched tightly, quickly brought up his open glove and gouged his thumb into Tom's eye. Tom pulled back, instinctively pawing at his eye with his right glove. Roger, spotting the opening, took immediate advantage of it, shooting a hard, looping right that landed flush on Tom's jaw. Tom went down. Unaware of Roger's tactics, Astro jumped into the ring and his arm pumped the deadly count.
1, 2, 3, 4.
It was going to be tough if Roger won, Astro thought, as he counted.
5, 6.
Arrogant enough now, he would be impossible to live with.
7, 8.
Tom struggled up to a sitting position and stared angrily at his opponent in the far corner.
9.
With one convulsive effort, Tom regained his feet. His left eye was closed and swollen, his right bleary with fatigue. He wobbled drunkenly on his feet, but he pressed forward. This was one fight he had to win. Roger moved in for the finish. He slammed a left into Tom's shell, trying to find an opening for the last finishing blow. But Tom remained in his shell, forearms picking off the smashes that even hurt his arms, as he waited for the strength to return to his legs and arms and his head to clear. He knew that he couldn't go another round. He wouldn't be able to see. It would have to be this round. And he had to beat Roger. Not because he wanted to, but because Roger was a member of the unit, and he had to keep the unit together. He circled his unit mate with care, shielded himself from the shower of rights and lefts that rained around him. He waited, waited for the one perfect opening.
"Come on, open up and fight, Corbett," panted Roger.
Tom snapped his right in reply, He noticed that Roger moved in with a hook every time he tried to cross his right. He waited. His legs began to shake. Roger circled, and Tom shot out the left again, dropped into a semi-crouch, and fainted with the right cross. Roger moved in, cocking his fist for the left hook, and Tom was ready for him. He threw the right, threw it with every ounce of strength left in his body. Roger was caught moving in and took the blow flush on the chin. He stopped as if poleaxed. His eyes turned glassy, and then he dropped to the mat. He was out cold. Astro didn't even bother to count. Tom squatted on the mat beside Roger and rubbed the blonde head with his gloves.
Get some water, Astro, he said, gasping for breath. I'm glad I don't have to fight this guy again. And I'll tell you something else.
What? Asked Astro.
Anybody that wants to win as much as this guy does is going to win, and I want to have him on my side.
Astro merely grunted as he turned toward the water cooler.
Maybe, he called back, but he ought to read a book of rules first.
When he came back to the mat with the water, Roger was sitting up, biting the knots of the laces on his gloves. Tom helped him, and when the soggy leather was finally discarded, he shucked out his hand.
Well, Roger, I'm ready to forget everything we've said and start all over again.
Roger looked at the extended hand for a moment, his eyes blank and expressionless. Then, with a quick movement, he slapped it away and lurched to his feet.
Go blow your jets, he snarled,
and turning his back on them, stumbled across the gym. Tom watched him go, bewilderment and pain mirrored on his face.
I thought sure this would work, Astro, he sighed. I thought he'd come to his senses if...
Nothing'll make that space creep come to his senses,
Astro broke in disgustedly.
At least, nothing short of an atomic warhead. Come on, let's get you cleaned up.
Putting his arm around Tom's shoulder, the big Venusian led him across the floor of the deserted gym. And as they departed through the automatic sliding doors, a tall figure in the uniform of the Solar Guard stepped out of the shadows on the balcony above. It was Captain Strong. He stood silently at the rail, looking down at the mats and the soggy, discarded boxing gloves. Tom had won the fight, he thought, but he had lost the war. The unit was now farther apart than it had ever been. I hope you enjoyed Kerry Rockwell's Stand By for Mars, Chapter 5, despite or because of all the fighting. Next time, we'll be back with our final episode of the series, with a story that I love very much, titled A Bad Day for Sales, written by the great Fritz Lieber. Spoiler alert, it's about a robot. The Gentleman Spaceman's Atomic Hideout was written, produced, edited, and performed by Brad Grahowski. For more information about Gentleman Spaceman's Atomic Hideout, visit thevoiceofbrad.com/spaceman. If you are enjoying Gentleman Spaceman's Atomic Hideout, please subscribe and consider leaving a review wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts. Thank you, and journey well among the stars.